Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's Breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
All right, it's hour three, the KNC Masterpiece here on 105.3 The Fan. Will Chambers in with Mike Bassick, Alec Metford, Carter Freeman, coordinating that video on YouTube and Twitch. We appreciate you hanging out with us. We'll talk with Stephen Jones here coming up momentarily, but we were talking a little bit, Mike, in our last segment about the NFL stuff. And Carter came in and brought up another interesting point. We're going to talk later about ratings as opposed to with the NBA. We'll save that. You know, the level of competition in the games. We'll put it at that. But now it's time to talk with the Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of the Dallas Cowboys. Thanks to our friends at North Texas Ford Dealers. Ford is the best in Texas. He's Stephen Jones here on 105.3 The Fan. Stephen, appreciate the time as always. I know it's difficult coming after a loss as always. Boy, those Philly fans weren't exactly treating you guys very good from what I saw in the box.
Well, that's just what comes with going to Philadelphia. That's, one of the things that makes the NFL so colorful. And they've consistently been that way over the years. And it makes for interesting days there in Philadelphia. And especially, unfortunately, when we didn't play up to expectations. You can't turn the ball over like that against a really good football team. They were highly motivated to clinch their division. And, I thought we started off strong. We moved the ball well. We were really holding Saquon there in that first half. But then, just too many, too many self-inflicted wounds in terms of turning the ball over and, doing the things that you can't do if you're going to win a big football game on the road against a team like Philly has this year.
You know, just based on reputation, I thought they'd be a little bit nicer, but no, you're absolutely right. I mean, look, it's been a tough season, and you're going up against one of the best teams in the NFC, and one of the questions I had specifically is in comparison with them. I was talking earlier about how Philadelphia is constructed and how you all have to manage the cap and do so many different things. In Philadelphia, with their eight players that are not on rookie deals comprising 31% of their cap, which is their quarterback, running back, wide receivers, corners, tackles, and you guys are having to manage right now, four guys on your team are 32% of the cap. Moving forward, is that something you are going to address this offseason in order to go and get other players to create more depth that you weren't able to do this past offseason?
Yeah, I think one of the things, too, is, unfortunately, we have had, and, I'll say it again, the world's smallest violin, but, we have over 50% of our cap on IR, and those things, when they hit and hit at the wrong time, it makes for a challenge. For a team, obviously, San Francisco is another team that's had their share of injuries this year in terms of, a big percentage of their cap, sitting on IR. I mean, those are things that, come with the territory. I know, everybody has their different battles with the cap that hit at different times. And, Philly will have theirs coming up. Well, they'll have to make tough decisions. But, yeah, we're constantly looking at ways to look at our salary cap to give us the best opportunity with players like Dak, CD, and Micah. You throw Diggs in there, to let those guys, hopefully, one, stay on the field, but two, give us the best opportunity to make a great run.
So when you talk about opportunities with CD being out, it gives other guys opportunities. And I know Mingo got open down the sideline. Unfortunately, the ball was just off target there. Can you talk about maybe, I know it's 41-7, but some of the positives you saw from your younger wide receivers?
Yeah, I think all of them made plays at different times. Like I said, I thought, Rico had a big game yesterday. He had another 100-yard effort, put him over 1,000 yards. And then, of course, Tolbert stepped up and had a touchdown. I thought Cooks made some plays. I thought Brooks made a big play where he went up and got a ball. Fournay didn't show up as much this week as he did last. But, those are all young guys that, they'll get one more opportunity, this year, next week, to step up and make some plays. But, yeah, there's a lot of things we like in that group. Obviously, you're missing CD. It's certainly allows them to spread out the attention that they can give to other players. But, at the same time, we also are going to get a good long look to see, where we need to improve, as you guys said, as we look at ways to make this team better and give us more depth as we move forward.
Can you talk about Jordan Lewis and the season he's had? You know, you've had guys coming and going from that secondary over the years. He's been the one mainstay, and at 29 years old, it appears he's, maybe having his best year.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan's just an uber competitor in terms of the way he goes about his business, both on and off the field. I mean, he's hats off to him. He came back from a, serious injury a couple years ago and has really stepped up and answered the bell, did all the work he needed to do to get, back to full speed. And, certainly a leader on that defensive side of the ball. And, each week you're going to get his very best in terms of competing out there. And he's a guy who's, out of contract, but obviously a guy that we want to have back on this football team.
You talk about looking ahead to next year and some of these guys that, certainly you want to play a role. I know that there's been a lot of clamoring from the fan base, and we've talked a lot about getting a look at Trey Lance. After last year, the move to get him for the fourth round pick, considering where you are without playing for playoff position, we didn't see him at all, even in the fourth quarter. Is there a refusal to play him? What goes into why we have not been able to see Trey Lance get onto the field during a game?
Well, he did play the last series. Obviously, I think Mike was quoted as saying that he was, working, trying to get him in there a series even before that. And obviously what we're going to do is, we're wanting to finish strong against Washington, and we'll look at, look at that situation this week and see where we go from there. I know we'll be sitting down with Mike here, this afternoon and, as the week progresses to see how, who's going to be playing with all the injuries we have and who ought to step up and play.
Steven, you've had this situation where you guys aren't playing for anything in the last week because you're getting ready for your playoff matchup and there's not much you can do to improve. Washington makes the playoffs yesterday. Our assumption is that they're going to get ready for their playoff game. Does the preparation from the other side, you guys trying to win this week, playing a team that, I'm not saying they're not trying to win, but they're probably getting ready for the playoffs, how much does that change a team's preparation playing against a team that might not be putting their guys out there, saving them for the playoffs?
We can only control what we can control, and that's ourselves. And we certainly want to finish strong. We'll be out trying, obviously we want to go win the football game. We got a lot of respect for Washington. As you know, we got a great relationship, a great history with Dan Quinn. And, it's hard enough to get your own team prepared, much less get into how the other team, who they might play, who they might not play. So we just got to go out there and, do what's in the best interest of the Cowboy organization moving forward.
Steven, I know that when you go through these seasons, you haven't had, many of them. And when they have come, it's been, a lot of it due to losing the quarterback early on in the year. And it was a struggle early this season before, but you do lose Dak. How much of it during the year is there looking ahead towards, the offseason? Like, when does that start? Is it a full stop and waiting until the end of the year, or is it part of, okay, we weren't able to create depth because of the money here, and looking at other guys, how, when does that process start for you all when the season starts to kind of go downhill?
Yeah, we'll obviously start that after we play the Commanders. We'll go to work. We'll roll up our sleeves. We'll evaluate the season in full and as a whole, and a full body of work, and you know, where we can be better from a personnel standpoint and trying to create depth. And you know, this day and time, you do have to have your young players step up. Unfortunately, we had some young guys, you know, whether it's a Sam Williams, whether it's a Carson who was hurt early on, who was playing really well at first as our fourth corner. I mean, you know, you got young guys. Nealon missed a big chunk of the season in there. Guyton was in and out because of injuries, which probably hurt his progress. I mean, all these are things that we'll look at, you know, when the season's over. And right now we're going to concentrate on, you know, going out and beating the Commanders and, you know, seeing how our guys step up. We'll have a lot of young guys playing out there. As I said, I think we're now over 50% of our cap on IR when we move CD over. So, you know, it gives the good news about that is a lot of young guys are going to be out there playing, getting opportunities to show us, you know, what they can be about, not only against the Commanders on Sunday, but in the future.
Considering that, what's your assessment of the job that Mike McCarthy has done this year?
I think Mike's done a great job considering the challenges that we've had, and Mike Zimmer the same way. I mean, it's been a new group out there, whether it's the offensive line, whether it's a combination of cornerbacks, whether it's the D-line, different group of receivers moving in and out of there. You know, I think Mike's done a good job of getting the guys prepared. You know, again, I thought we started off the game against Philly, you know, really strong. We were moving the ball, sustaining drives, and, you know, doing a good job on the defensive side of the ball as well, containing Barkley. Hats off, by the way, to Saquon. I mean, what a year he's had. It's rare that you see that happen, you know, back going for 2,000 yards. And, you know, certainly he's had a hell of a year, so hats off to him. But I thought early on we played well, and then, as I said, we just, we made too many mistakes to beat a really good football team.
Steven, I know it's a different sport with the Texas Rangers, but they dealt with a lot of injuries too, trying to defend their championship and played under 500 baseball. And I asked them, and I know they didn't get into specifics, but they did kind of say, we might need to reevaluate how we get certain players ready for next year based off of the significant injuries they had and maybe a lot of lower half injuries that our organization had. And we maybe need to look into what we're doing to get these guys ready for the season. Are you guys going to maybe have to look at that too, with how many injuries you had? I know everybody's specific and different, and looking like, are we getting our guys prepared for 2025 the best way possible to avoid as many injuries as possible?
Well, we always look at that. We look at that not only very detailed and very much detailed organizationally, but the league as a whole, you know, really looks at player health and safety, as you know. And we've tried to, you know, really change the way we start training camp, you know, with the, you know, really letting them just start in shorts, and the acclimation period being a big part of that. And, you know, the data shows that, you know, that it's worked. We've got to go back and look at each one of our injuries and see, you know, what could have been, how we could have done something differently that would have changed, you know, some of the things that are going on. But, you know, sometimes, like you said, it's just, you know, one team, you know, one area, bad luck. But then at the same time, you don't want to stick your head in the sand, and you got to see where we can be better.
Steven, Jay Glazer yesterday on Fox reported, actually in postgame, that multiple teams have Mike McCarthy on their head coaching list if the Cowboys, if you all let him walk. What is your reaction to that and hearing that?
It doesn't surprise me a bit. I mean, Mike's an established head coach in this league. He's won Super Bowl. He's won a Super Bowl championship. He's been to multiple championship games. You know, obviously we had a tough start with the COVID year that everybody was trying to get their hands around, and followed that up with 3-12 win seasons. And then, of course, we've had this year, but this year's been a challenge for the obvious reasons with injuries. So, you know, that doesn't surprise me a bit. I mean, Mike's an established coach in this league who, you know, consistently has success. And, you know, unfortunately, we've just had a tough year this year. But it doesn't surprise me a bit there'd be interest in Mike McCarthy.
Does it play a role in anything on determining whether or not you would like to bring him back?
Like you said, we'll address all this after the Commanders game.
Steven, we appreciate the time as always. Happy New Year. Thank you.
Great being on, guys. Happy New Year.
You too. Appreciate it. That's Steven Jones here. Thanks to our friends at North Texas Ford Dealers. Ford is the best in Texas. Let's take a break. Come back with the Expressway. React to some of the answers that Steven gave us, as well as fighting in the NBA. That's all next here on The Fan.
Back to throw. They blitz him. He throws it left. It's intercepted at the 30. Right to the 40. Across midfield and the sideline, and this is coming all the way. It's a pick six for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Not an ideal way to start a ball game. That was Brad Sham. Right here on your home of the Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan. It's the KNC Masterpiece. Will Chambers with Mike Bassick, Alec Metford, Carter Freeman, coordinating the video. You can get us on YouTube and Twitch. All right, the Expressway, we're going to get into some NBA Mavericks and fighting. But first, a little reaction to, not a surprise, you know, trying to get some reaction from what we heard from Jay Glazer on Fox yesterday on Mike McCarthy. We know that these, you know, the answer is going to be, he's not going to give us right now whether he's coming back or not. But, you know, that being said, you know, hearing what the assessment is, and this is where you get so much, Mike, debate and heated debate. Because I think most of us will say you're not going to put this year on Mike McCarthy. There's been injuries. There are so many departures, you know, from the roster that weren't, you know, necessarily filled by other notable names because of money, et cetera, et cetera. They've played well. I mean, they've gotten some of those players back, and they've played well despite some of this. But at the same time, do we believe that this is the guy that's going to get the Cowboys into a Super Bowl?
No, but I'm not a strong no on that. I think it's, I'm going to be honest here. It's impossible with Dak Prescott as your quarterback. So that's where I'm at on that. But I also don't want to put this all on Dak. I do think Jerry is the leading cause of the lack of success for the Dallas Cowboys. But now where Dak is in his career, an unathletic, injury-prone quarterback, I think that he's still solid. I think that he next year will be a solid NFL quarterback. He's not going to be a crappy one. I think he'll be solid with injury issues. But I don't think whether you love Bill Belichick or Ben Johnson, I know Belichick's out of the picture now, but
right.
Whoever you love, I don't think at this point where you're at salary-wise, where you're at with team building, what you have available to team build with Dak Prescott as your quarterback, I think it's pretty much impossible to make a run and go to the Super Bowl slash even win the Super Bowl with him as your quarterback.
What's so difficult in talking about this team and why they don't win, and this is before this season, is because they're abstract things. They're not definitive. I'm not going to say I disagree with you on the Dak, because that's not abstract, right? We could talk about whether or not you think he's a talented enough quarterback to get you to a Super Bowl and to win a Super Bowl. But we know over the past three seasons that they had a talented enough roster to get them to those places, right? But why don't they? Well, it could be this and that. It's speculating. It's abstract. It's all those things. And I won't even say I disagree with you on the whole Jerry Jones thing. It very well could be. It's like, we don't really know for sure. To me, and I appreciate Mike McCarthy I think he's a really good coach. And I think that he could win another Super Bowl somewhere else. I don't know if he can win it here, because I think the change that you need made has to happen with the type of attitude on this team. And the mentality, the character, the personality of it. You know, Dan Campbell, with what they're doing in Detroit, they have a personality. They're going, but they personify his personality. What are they going to look like over the course of the next few years without Ben Johnson as their offensive coordinator? I don't know, right? It may not be as good. That's why, to me, if you make the move, and I think to get to that next step, a lot has to happen with the roster. That's why I've liked Mike Vrabel for this position. You need a tough, just no-nonsense SOB in there. I don't know if Jerry would ever do it, but that's the type of thing, because to me, it's so difficult to assess from an abstract point of view as to why that team folded against the Packers. Why? Maybe if they had a tougher mentality, if they had kind of a Dan Campbell type of coach in there, it would be different. By the way, I could be totally wrong on that too.
Yeah, the thing is what you're saying is we don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, when they played the Packers in the playoffs in 2016, the guy who was coaching the Packers outcoached the Cowboys and won that game. I mean, he put in I remember one of a key play, and I'm sorry, I'm forgetting Bruce or whatever his name was, the wide receiver. He put in the referee's head early in the game, hey, the Cowboys do something on the sideline, which is technically illegal. It's not a big deal, but it's technically illegal. And they got him after a big play or something. They're like, oh, there was an illegal substitution. That 30-yard play doesn't count. And the next thing you know, you're down 21-0. And I'm like,
was it something about in the huddle?
Yeah, something. They do something that was like technically illegal, but the Cowboys had been doing it all year. It wasn't like out of the norm for some other NFL teams to do, but Mike McCarthy saw something on film. He's like, hey, that's actually technically illegal. I'm going to put in the referee's head without the Cowboys knowing they do something illegal. That they shouldn't be doing in some sort of substitution pattern with their wide receivers. And it worked out perfectly on a big play. I think Terrence Williams caught the ball, but Terrence Williams wasn't the like illegal situation.
I want to say it was the kid for the guy they had from Jacksonville. Man, I'm going deep in the memory bank for that.
This is like, oh, Mike McCarthy sucks as a coach. Well, he did something in a playoff game against the Cowboys in 2016, which caused the game to get to be 21-0 Green Bay. So I'm just not against him. I don't think he's
Bryce Butler.
Thank you. He's not a bad coach. We've seen him out coach. I know Jason Garrett. I'm not a fan of Jason Garrett as a coach. I think he's an Ivy League guy who's a front office guy if he ever got in football, but he's not a coach. The game moves too fast for his brain.
I think he's terrific on television, to be honest.
Yeah. But I think the game, in my opinion, his brain works too methodically, and that's not good. As a coach for Jason Garrett, I think he's a very smart person, just not head coach material. But look, it is what it is, you know.
Yeah, I know. By the way, probably should have checked that for sure, but that was it's like Trey Lance played. There was like a minute and a half, and I was like, wait.
So I was listening. You were right in saying he didn't play. He handed the ball off a few times and passed it once. But I was listening to the game here on 105.
He could have played the whole fourth quarter.
Babe and Brad were having a conversation going into the fourth quarter. This game's over. I want to say it was 31-7 going into the quarter or 34-7 going into the fourth quarter. And Brad and Babe were like, well, at this point, you're not benching Cooper Rush for a bad game. You're just like, the game's over. Let's give Trey Lance two or three possessions here to see what happens, to see what he does. And the Cowboys, like 100%, like, do not let this person be seen. We can have opinions on that tomorrow on why 100% the Cowboys did not want any human being watching Trey Lance play. Maybe because he's so pathetic, they don't want to show how stupid of a trade it was by showing him more. Or he's doing so many good things in practice that they don't want him to accidentally be great in one of these games. I don't know which one it is, but it's one of those two things on why the Cowboys refused to play Trey Lance in a 41-7 ball game.
Totally. And just got done talking to Stephen Jones, and The Athletic has a piece, which team has the best front office in the big four leagues. These executives vote on that, on their peers, essentially. We're going to talk about that. Where do the Cowboys fit in that, or where do they rank? We'll talk about that at 1 o'clock. Fighting in the NBA seems to be good ratings wise, at least.
So, I mean, so the Mavericks obviously win a big game in Phoenix. They lose a game in Portland based off of a fight. But I loved what the Mavericks did. And I think there needs to be more fighting in the NBA. This is what I grew up on, is fighting in the NBA. The two most
just popular
games.
Just more physicality,
games,
really.
But the two most popular games over the last 72 hours, there's been two very popular games in the NBA. One was Dallas-Phoenix because of a fight, and the other was last night, Houston and Miami because of a fight. I'm not saying you promote fighting, but the NBA does have a ratings problem, which we'll get into here in a little bit. What was millions of views, the game watched the most the other night was Dallas and Phoenix on YouTube, the replays of it, because of the fight. The game watched most yesterday, millions of views already. Why? Because Tyler Hero was the one who got thrown to the ground.
Yeah,
because
he was scared. Eamon Thompson.
There you go. Thank you. Because he was scared to throw a punch because you can get suspended, like Najee Marshall got suspended 4 games for defending himself and throwing a punch. But that's what the NBA should be. These are grown men. These aren't kids. And I know what, you know what?
It's a physical sport. It should be more, but
if somebody gets into my face, I can get them out of my face. Now,
especially if you get hit on top of the head by that player.
I get sucker punching like Rudy Tomjanovich, and most people are too. Like, you can't punch a dude in the temple and he's not even looking. That should be a major suspension. But if somebody gets into your face because they want to fight, last night, Houston and Miami wanted to fight. They were all squaring off against each other. Let them fight. They're grown men. And guess what? Ratings galore. It is entertaining.
And also, Mike, it builds up to the intrigue for those matchups down the line. I mean, you get these rivalries that last, like, remember the Clippers-Mavs? That was like that's not a rivalry anymore. But for 3 years, two, 3 years? It was, because you keep facing them in the playoffs. Yeah. And then, there's going to be fight. You want stuff like that. You don't want it to look like, you don't want the whatever in the palace,
100%.
With Indiana and
100%.
Detroit.
100%. But that was a fan throwing something at Ron Artest.
You don't want anything to be ugly.
But if a guy approaches me, like Nurkic approached Najee Marshall and the whole team, and decided to put his hand into Najee Marshall's face, punching's fine. When Kurt Rambis got clotheslined by Kevin McHale in the NBA Finals, punching's fine. Like that, at that point, punching's fine. These are grown men. They're facing off against each other. There's no sucker punches happening. They're grown men facing off against each other.
Bill Laimbeer did it on a play and wasn't even kicked. It wasn't even a flagrant, I don't think.
Yeah. So there's multiple things here. One, it's fine. They're grown men. Let them fight. Two, it's super entertaining. Three, I loved what the Mavs did. I get that they lost a game in Portland because of it, but I need these Mavericks, not that they have the 0203 reputation of the Mavericks where they're a bunch of soft white boys. Mm-hmm. And if you're like, oh, don't say that. That's what Nick Van Exel coming over from the Denver Nuggets said when he got traded for Juwan Howard and other people and Rafe LaFrance. He said, you know, you guys are a bunch of soft white boys. And guess what? In this trade, you added another soft white boy in Rafe LaFrance. We got to get rid of being the soft white boys around the NBA because that's what the 29 other teams, when they play you guys, think of Sean Bradley, Dirk Nowitzki, Steve Nash, Eduardo Nájera. I know Eduardo Nájera is not white, but they just thought of this Dallas Maverick team as a bunch of soft white boys and you can bully them. Nick Van Exel came and said, this has to change. If we're going to do anything special, and they almost did in 2003, we have to change this. And I'm not saying the Mavericks.
The Bulls, by the way.
Yeah, there you go. With the Pistons,
it wasn't just Michael, right? We saw in The Last Dance.
Scotty would ask out.
They're all in there. They were all in that weight room. Like, we need to be tougher. Like, this, we need to fight them.
I want this Maverick team, and this is very tough in this day and age because they won't allow you. I want them to become the bad boys. I think they have the players that can do it. Najee Marshall is a dog. Mm-hmm. We've seen PJ Washington last year in the playoffs, just recently pushing Nurkic when Nurkic was like, I'm going to stand in here because the punch missed. The punch did not connect. It maybe grazed the ear.
Yeah.
It was PJ Washington who took two hands and threw Nurkic to the ground like, come back in here and see what happens. We're not messing around. We're throwing punches and everything now. We will kill you. You want to come in here? This isn't the fake NBA for the last 20 years. This is the Mavericks. Like, this is real. We will try to kill you if you get back into our face, and we don't care about suspensions. I love that. Going into the stands, Ron Artest, that's wrong. You got to let police take care of that. There's no assault in professional sports. If you charge the mound, if I throw at you, there's no assault.
It's controlled assault.
This is, but like in real, you take the bat to the mound, Juan Marichal.
Yeah, it's a little
different situation. But like, one, The NBA needs to relax on the suspensions of fights. In fact, not that they don't need to suspend Najee Marshall a game or
but
two.
But 4 games?
4 games is too much, but they established this back in Malice in the Palace.
Yeah.
This is totally different. Too many guys are taking cheap shots in the NBA or doing stupid things. Like, I'm going to get in your face and I'm 6'4" and you're 7'2" and you can kick my butt. Because you can't do what Shaq used to do. Shaq used to be like, screw it. I'll throw a punch at you, Barkley. Yeah. I'll throw a ball at you, Dudley. Like, I'll do whatever. And we're going to fight. And maybe game suspension.
Yeah.
Zoe and Shaq used to talk about one of the problems in the NBA. They didn't used to talk about it. They recently did. Is Shaq and Zoe really, even though they liked each other a little bit off the court, they really didn't like each other because they were going after the same thing. And now you see so many guys hugging and smiling and having a great deal. And they're like, so for fans, they're like, well, everybody just loves each other. They're not really competing. This doesn't seem competitive because
there's a lot more movement too.
True. 100%. True.
So when you said the Bad Boys, I'm trying to think right now, who would be the, is it Memphis? Of all the teams you can think of right now,
Miami for a while, but I think they're losing that reputation. But for a while, you're like, hey, man, Miami, don't mess around with Miami. Jimmy Butler and these guys, like, they'll really fight.
Doesn't get
like,
much tougher than that.
And I do like that the Mavericks are setting a tone. Last year in the playoffs, this game against Phoenix on don't mess with our guys. We don't care if it's Luka. We don't care if it's Daniel Gafford, Derek Lively. You mess with us. And we're not going to back down. In fact, we're going to take it to you if you try to. So I did love that. I understand that it cost the Mavs a game. It could cost the Mavs more games because Najee Marshall's only sat out one game. PJ Washington got suspended a game. He'll be back tonight, I believe. Derek Lively, I know he wasn't in the fight. He's just I mentioned this before. He's not worrying me. People are worried about Evan Carter. And I try to tell people, I get where your worry comes from.
Mm-hmm.
He's a child. Evan Carter is in a normal 21-year-old body. Most guys that make the NBA or NFL or Major League Baseball, they have an adult body no matter how old they are. Evan Carter has a child's body still. Derek Lively has a child's body still. And that's why they miss so many games, is their body is not ready to play at a professional level, even though their talent is that their body can't handle the schedule yet. And I think Derek Lively's body eventually will be able to handle the schedule maybe 2-3 years down
the road. It's the biggest difference between going from the college to the pros where you're going to play 30 games to 82.
And you're playing grown men.
Yeah.
And then in the schedule too. But I look at the Mavs. I like what I saw in Phoenix. I get they lost in Portland. Look, they had 3 starters out. Mm-hmm. They had Najee Marshall out. Look, they were at a major deficit. Maxi Kleber played 33 minutes and had 0 points. So, I mean, like, you don't want to play him that many minutes. I get he's a contributor when he's healthy, but, like, right now the Mavs are in a tough situation. PJ Washington comes back tonight. I haven't seen Derek Lively. I don't think he's coming back tonight. That hurts you. Mm-hmm. He's in Dwight Powell and Maxi Kleba have to pick up extra minutes that they're not really capable of doing. They give you great effort. I'll give you this for Dwight Powell. In that Phoenix game, the one thing about having Dwight Powell, which I've taken zillions of shots.
I was just going to say, can we get ready to mark this, Alec?
Here's the deal about Dwight Powell. As a 12th through 15th man, you love having those guys because at no point in Dwight Powell's life have you ever heard me question his effort.
Mm-hmm.
His talent, I've questioned a zillion times. His effort, I will never question. Nobody plays harder than Dwight Powell in the NBA over the last 10 years. People have played as hard as him, but nobody could ever say, oh, I play harder than Dwight Powell. You could say, well, you play as hard as Dwight Powell. Now, everybody in the NBA is more talented than Dwight Howard, but nobody can ever question Dwight Powell's effort. And so when people start getting thrown out of games and when guys are hurt, having guys at the end of your bench where you're like, we're never going to question this guy's effort. Like JaVale McGee.
Yeah.
You had to he wasn't trying. Like, he literally wasn't trying for your organization. That really stinks.
Plus, there's something to be said for some energy off the bench. I know that's kind of cliche, but I
that's who you want. I remember the Baylor head coach. Help me out. You know college basketball great. Baylor's head coach.
Oh, Drew?
Yeah, Scott Drew, right?
Mm-hmm.
He said, man, so many guys can stay in the NBA longer if they were just good towel waivers. But so many guys don't want to be good towel waivers because they were great at your school, Kentucky or Baylor or whatever. And then they have to become these role players or these guys at the end of the bench that have to become towel waivers. And he's like, sometimes you just have to become a great towel waver. And Dwight Powell's okay with being a towel waver. In fact, he's a great towel waver. Yeah. And then he comes in and shows great energy. So I just wanted to give Dwight Powell, in a weird way,
yeah, a compliment there.
Compliment for like in it. Phoenix and in Portland. Like, he's not a good player, but he does for 12th through 15th men guys. That's who you want on your team. Great guys like that.
And they are in Sacramento tonight take
which
on
is
the
gonna
Kings.
Be a tough game.
9 o'clock.
I know that they just fired
energy
coach.
With new coach. I guess I don't. Like, what's Mike Brown? What was he going to do there?
But anyways, I don't know about you guys, but I love the Mavs fight. I love that they did fight. I want them to be fighters. And then I want the NBA to relax on this. They're grown men.
Yeah.
You sucker punch a guy? Major suspension. A guy gets into your face and grabs your jersey like Thompson did last night to Hero. Punch him in the face.
Yeah.
We're fine with that.
Yeah.
It's like, it's sports and we
make
love
it, a game,
it.
Make it a game, 2 games max. I thought the four, I was like, wow. I mean, that's
we've
pretty
that
heavy.
We love it as fans. Yeah. We love when benches clear in Major League Baseball. We love fights in NHL. We loved, obviously, by the millions upon millions of views that the Dallas Maverick Phoenix Suns game got, and then the millions of views last night and this morning that Houston and Miami got, we actually want fighting in the NBA. We don't want cheap shots, and we don't want guys going up into the stands. That has to be protected.
Mm-hmm.
But if a guy gets in your face because he's challenging your manhood and wants to act like he's fighting, at that point, throwing punches, to me, is appropriate.
One of the most iconic scenes in NBA history was Heat Knicks with Jeff Van Gundy biting on the ankles of Alonzo Mourning. I mean, that was, you know, and, you know, Tola from the 812, the Pacers were a force in the 2000s, you know, with Antonio and Dale Davis. They were tough.
Yeah. Like a person here says, I'm awake, are you? I'll give you a little bit of props here because he's talking about me, doesn't know who I am, I don't think, which I'm not a fighter at all. He says, dude keeps talking about fighting when he doesn't look like a fighter himself. Go figure. Well, look, I played in the major leagues, in your face. And if I would have hit...
It's got to be more me than
if
you.
I would have hit David Ortiz, or Juan Gonzalez was my teammate for a year, guess what? I know they're going to kick my ass. So I'm going to look for protection.
Yeah.
I'm smart enough to know to not get in their face because I know I'm going to die in that situation.
Well, no, look,
I will stand up for myself as much as possible. And by the way, fights happen in clubhouses.
You could still get your ass kicked, but you still don't want to make it enjoyable for that person so that they can, if you don't want to let anybody treat you in the way that they, like, you know, own you physically.
Right.
You're like, yeah, could that person, you know, whip my butt? Absolutely. But I'm going to get some shots in to make it so that is definitely not fun for that other person as well. You're not going to talk to me or be that way with me. I haven't gotten a fight in 20 years, but
I'm going to get my butt kicked against a lot of guys in Major League Baseball when I played. Now, there were times that I had to stand up for myself. I had a teammate, Pat Strange. We're actually roommates in AAA for the New York Mets. And we used terms then that we can't use now, but I'll just say he was something strong back in the day, which he was very strong. He challenged me one time. We're in Charlotte to a fight in the clubhouse, and we're goofing off but kind of being serious, and I'm like, crap, I got a fight now, and I know I do because I don't want to be a wussy with a capital P in this situation. So I know I'm going to get my ass kicked. I know that I can't beat up this guy. I know he's going to kick my ass, but I got to stand up for myself here. And so I stand up for myself. Eventually, I don't know. Was it 20 seconds? Was it 30 seconds? I don't know. Eventually, Pat Strange kicks my ass.
Mm-hmm.
But he respected me afterwards when I like tapped out. I'm like, I'm done. He has me in a chokehold. I can't breathe. And he is like, I give you credit. And he knew he could kick my ass the whole time. He just wanted to see if I was going to back down from it.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
and my teammates wanted to just see, is he going to wuss out or is he going to actually fight? And I was like, I'm going to have to fight here. And I knew, like, I'm going to get my ass kicked, but I'm going to have to fight because I need to show him that I'm going to stand up for myself, and I need to show my teammates I'll stand up for myself. And afterwards, Pat Strange was like, man, I got a lot of like respect for you because, man, you gave me a little bit. I didn't think you could, and he kicked my ass. I'm not saying I'm awake, dude. Like, I got my ass kicked. I would lose most fights to most people that are professional athletes when I was one. But I do really like when guys stand up for their teammates and stand up for themselves, and I fell more in love with Najee Marshall, and I'm already in love with PJ Washington for what they did. That's why we love Tyson Chandler so much.
And before I leave this space after tomorrow, I want to ask you more about the depth, because the depth has been a huge part of the Mavericks' success this year, right? Especially with Luka being out.
Now for over a month.
How much is that going to really play a role when we get into the playoffs? But I know we're emerging into Mike Likes It here. Yeah. We're talking a little, you know, with the ratings. That's a fight in and of itself with the NBA right now.
Yeah, so the NBA ratings on Christmas Day had a major uptick. And so I was wondering this with the two NFL games on Netflix. How would Netflix do? And Netflix did very well. I think they were like, they both had about the same ratings, about at a 25 rating for both of those games. And that's on Netflix.
Yeah.
And that's the only way you could watch. You couldn't watch it any other way except for Netflix. So great job by the NFL. Once again, they kill it. They did a great job. But the NBA at the same time had a big ratings uptick. And I was reading this article. It said, a little bit deceiving, but the numbers are right.
Right. So, and I want to put this in the context of, oh, it's not as bad as everybody's saying because of how many threes are being taken, because look at Christmas Day. And I'm like, I'm not saying that that's a prevailing narrative, but to anybody that would, I'd be like, no.
Yeah. And so I didn't know this until the article came out. So last year on Christmas, where the NBA beat their numbers pretty significantly last year, either none of the games or just one of the games was on ABC. All of the games were on ESPN last year. The uptick in just putting a game from ESPN to ABC is approximately 500,000 to 2 million extra viewers. They're like, over time, if you just watch a playoff game that's on ESPN versus a playoff game that's on ABC, all you have to do is throw it on the national network instead of throwing it on a cable channel.
Which is a pretty big bump.
Which then it gets me into another discussion about Major League Baseball. Why are you putting games on Fox Sports 1 when you see that there's a million person increase pretty much if you just throw it on Fox instead of Fox Sports 1? If you just throw the game on ABC instead of ESPN,
I didn't understand.
There's a 500,000 to 2 million uptick. So they did,
especially
that
when you're fighting for as many headlines or eyeballs as you possibly can get.
So this was already done. This wasn't like the NBA going, hey, we're having some major watching problems. We just need to throw them on ABC. And they decided 3 days before Christmas to do it. It was already going to be on ABC. But they said that was one major reason why they got an uptick, is the games were on ABC instead of on ESPN. Two, the game that drew by far the most ratings, and it did get a very good number, was Lakers and Golden State. One, they went to kind of, hey, let's go back to LeBron versus Curry. Before the season started.
Yeah.
And it worked. And they said also a major reason it worked was...
Not exactly rocket science, by the way.
It was the primetime game. Last year, Christmas had three games for the NFL. And they were on major channels, I think. I remember reading this. I might be wrong on this. But they're like... Obviously, they weren't on Netflix. This was the first year of Netflix. Is the Golden State LA Laker game had no NFL game to compete against. So the major uptick was it was a good game. Mm-hmm. It was a competitive game. And then there was no NFL to turn to.
Yeah, there's no competition there. So if you're saying it's up, like what was it comparatively while both were going on?
Yeah.
You know, like what does that look like? But then even then it gets skewed because I was thinking it just hit me a moment ago. I meant to look this up and I keep forgetting to do so. I think I'm able to find it right here. What was it going to look like with the college football playoff games versus NFL going on at the same time? But then, as it turned out, you know, those games, none of which were super competitive. I don't know if that mattered as much because you're having college football games being played on the campuses of certain teams. So it still was a really cool atmosphere to take in and watch. But it doesn't help anytime that you've got blowout games. And the NFL had two kind of non-competitive games when it came to on Christmas.
Yeah.
That as well. And I mean, that's going to help your ratings in the NBA.
The NBA did get fortunate. You can't predict this. But besides the Maverick game, which I get got competitive at the end, they had very competitive games in starting off with the Knicks in San Antonio. And you had obviously the Golden State LA game, which was very competitive. Mavericks made a run in the end after Luka got hurt. But it does say this. It says in this article, too, it says advertisers are not worried that the NBA ratings are bad this year so far. They say, we never worry. This is an advertiser here saying, we never worry about when we buy the NBA product about their quarter four numbers, which are the start of the year. We worry about our Q2 numbers. That is in the springtime.
Okay, yeah. When they...
So if they
own everything.
If their ratings are bad in April, May, June, if I have that cue right, January, February, March. Yeah, April, mm-hmm. May, June. Like April, May, June is where the advertisers, where a lot of their TV revenue comes from. If their numbers are down in 2025 for these playoffs and they're not raising and they're lowering, that's where advertisers start going, should we pay next year for this? Should we put our product on this, or should we ask for a major discount because you're not getting the eyes that you were supposed to get or promised to get or used to get in the NBA. So is an interesting article. NBA up for Christmas Day. Multiple reasons why. And then advertisers are saying, look, we get it. We get that it's a topic. We're giving you the topic right now. But if it affects our Q2 numbers, which is the end of the season in the NBA and the NBA playoffs, if the ratings stink then that's when we throw a hissy fit.
And that's a major problem because when you don't have, you know, for all intents and purposes, a lot of competition out there, and they really don't during that period, that's when they get to own the stage. Yeah. That's a problem. And I think that they're going to... People are still going to watch, but I think it's going to be lower if it continues like this. Like I think I fall into where most are feeling right now, which is why the numbers are down. And the example here would be the Mavericks Warriors game with all those threes, where at first I'm like, oh man, like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then I'm kind of like, this is turning into a circus. Like, I feel like it's a 3-point contest or something that would be done an All-Star game weekend, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel it's a problem. What do you think?
Oh, it's 100% a problem. But the mathematicians came in and they figured out basketball. It really sucks, but it is just the math of
this
it.
This is the problem that I had in baseball.
Yep. And we'll talk about that tomorrow maybe.
Yeah.
If you shoot 37% from three, you should take all 3-pointers.
Because you're ultimately going to get to a certain number.
You should never take a two.
Yeah.
And so the mathematicians have come in saying, I know nothing about basketball. Don't understand how it works or anything, but I've done the math. If we just shoot the ball every time from three at 37%, that is better than dunking the basketball.
What would you do? I mean, if we're putting limits on threes.
I would make one the arc.
Yeah.
Not go into the corners. There's no corner threes anymore. That will stop that. And I'm going to move the 3-point line now that guys have the range that they have. I'm going to move it even 2 feet further back.
Okay. I said this years ago. I asked Tim Kirchin. I said, you know, what about moving the fences back and moving the bases back a little bit? In regards to, you've got bigger, faster, stronger athletes. You've got that the same way in the NBA with also the range. You know, I mean, it started with Steph Curry, and now we see a lot more of it. They are able to do it from further back. So I don't hate that. I thought maybe if you limit to how many attempts per game that you can take a three, at this point, I'm willing to listen to anything because if that's what we're going to be getting from here on out.
We've changed all the carrying and everything. Like, yeah. I mean, dribbling. You can actually double dribble now in the NBA. You just can't triple dribble. And you can take 4 steps, and it used to be 2.5 back in the day. I would say now.
But if you get, you know, it's breathed on.
For offense, you can stay in the lane now for 5 seconds.
Oh, my.
So there's not offensive 3 seconds. Because I need the ball to get into the post. I need the ball to want to be in the paint more. And so if I'm like, well, I mean, if you do get a dude like Shaquille O'Neal, I don't think they're creating those anymore. But you can be in the lane for 5 seconds. Oh. I can hang around the rim a lot now.
Oh,
I mean, it's extreme. But at this point, to your point, I saw Tim Legler say this. The Mavericks are shooting 34 threes. He used them as an example. That's one of the lowest in the NBA.
Yeah.
Shooting 34 threes in a game, the Mavericks are in the bottom third. Because he's like, if the Mavs win a championship, shooting 34 threes a game, they got close last year, but if they win a championship, shooting in the bottom third, maybe teams would look at the Derek Lively, Daniel Gafford model and go, we need more of the alley-oop model and less of the jack-up 45 threes a game model.
That number, I believe, off the top of my head, is close to what the Warriors did three-point-wise per game when they won their 72, games or wins. And that was far and away the most in the NBA. And this is another good point, too, before we get to this piece in The Athletic. I promise y'all, it's not the game of basketball that's wrong. It's how much cable and streaming costs. I've watched 20 games this year through non-conventional streaming. That's another issue that the NBA has, too. Baseball kind of has it because it's this whole deal with whatever it's called now, FanDuel Network.
Right.
That's,
what Valleys used to be, is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a problem. Okay. Great piece in The Athletic. We talked opening up this hour with Stephen Jones, Executive Vice President and COO of the Dallas Cowboys. Well, The Athletic has a piece up where they pulled 40 executives and coaches in each of the four major leagues. And with that info, ranked the best front offices. Where are the Cowboys? The Dallas Stars, where they are. Big surprise here, or maybe not. That's next on The Fan.